Hey, everybody, Lady Luck here, and we're celebrating America's 250th birthday. Now, all summer long, I'm going to be celebrating by playing on FinQuest.com, which is an American-owned social casino. It obviously features over 1,000 slot games and live blackjack, live craps, live bubble craps. Head on over to SpinQuest.com. Get yourself a $30 coin pack for just 10 bucks.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Mooning.
You all right? I do hope you are. I really do sincerely hope you are. Me? Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, thanks for asking. Cheers. Yeah. As always, I'm joined by my producer, Little Harry. How are you this morning, guitar?
Morning. Yeah, I'm all good.
The omniscient, omnipresent voice of the all-powerful producer there. It is just ticked 8 in the a.m. British summertime on Tuesday. No, wait. Is it Tuesday? Wednesday? I've lost track of days. It's Wednesday, isn't it? Wednesday now. Yeah, it is Wednesday. Wednesday the 22nd of July in the year of our Lord, 2026. Should we stop faffing about, though? Stop fanning about. Let's just get straight into it. What's the legacy corporate lamestream media banging on about this morning? What's that cabal of, quite frankly, evil Fleet Street editors lying to you about by omission, if nothing else, as they do every single day? Okay, what have we got? Let's see, what have we got for you? The glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Right, Burnham's power play, and Widdicombe hit 21 times with a hammer. Dark, grim, yeah, some of the details of Anne Widdicombe's assassination came out yesterday. So it's on the front pages today. So it's a Burnham and Widdicombe day, basically. They're the two stories that absolutely dominate the front pages of the papers. Should we just get straight into it? The Metro. Who do you think you are? Sorry. Who do you think you are? What do you think you're doing? Trying to subvert our country. Filth. You're filth. Anne Widdicombe's murderer accused in court. And struck on head 21 times with hammer. Got to talk about it a little bit because it is the first or second biggest story of the day. As horrible as it is. That's mad. I mean, for a start, look at the court drawing I did. There's another court drawing. Another one that actually looks more like the guy, because we've got a photo of the guy. Apparently, the guy the police say it is that guy. There's another court drawing which does look more like him. Whereas this court drawing looks like a brown person, doesn't it? It looks like a Turkish person or something, doesn't it? I guess it's just a really bad drawing. In fact, I think on some of the other papers, they've got they go with the other drawing, look. Where it looks actually like a bit more like the guy it's supposed to be. I guess this, if you're only listening to the audio of this, I can't help you. So what was this drawing about? When it first came out yesterday, like, people on Twitter, including myself, were like, wait, what's going on? Doesn't look anything like him. But I guess it's simply a case of that particular cult artist not being that good, or like too much a liberal use of like brown shading on him. Anyway, that's besides the point, really, isn't it? That's sort of not really the point here. He came into her home because the front door was unlocked or even open because it was a heat wave. Like, she lives in a really rural place, remote, rural and remote. She wouldn't expect anyone to do a home invasion. And it's baking hot, so you leave your front door open, mightn't you? So it seems he just strolled straight in. She was in her kitchen having lunch because it was about midday or whatever, roughly. And I guess he just goes straight up to her and just hammers her in the head 21 times. And then it seems, from some of the details, she was still just slumped in her chair. So he tipped her out of her chair onto the floor, face first. Took her wallet, or purse, or something, and left. And the ordeal lasted about 2 minutes, apparently, according to pathologists or whatever, the police. And she wasn't found until the next day by her gardener, where she was found face down on the kitchen floor. What an unbelievably, unbelievably brutal thing. That is what is called overkill, isn't it? Sometimes someone will stab someone else like 100 times. Overkill. Like the first 2 or 3 blows would have been enough. But you just keep going and going and going. Absolutely off the charts brutal, isn't it? What a monster. In Bo's Britain, if he was found guilty beyond all doubt, that's a hanging. Faux show. 100% slam dunk execution for that. You forfeited your right to life for a crime like that. I mean, you can only imagine that he was like, you know, he's a real loser, absolute leftist, and he took all his rage out on Anne Widdecombe's head in those moments. Everything, his parents, his relationship, women, politics, the whole world. He got to take it out on Anne Widdecombe's head with a hammer. Scum, absolute filth. I mean, it's... All right, that's it. I mean, that's all I'm going to say about it. That's all there is to say about it at the moment, isn't there, really? Frankly. It's on the front page of all the papers. Suspect's ferocity of violence in a planned, targeted 2-minute attack as ex-MP ate lunch in her kitchen. Okay, The Sun. Prime Minister Burnham's VAT cut clash. He's gone back on a number of things already, he said, it seems. About tax allowances and various other things. We'll get into it. There's a picture of Shakira and J-Lo. Okay. Widdecombe horror. Anne hit 21 times with hammer by this guy. Apparently this guy. Murder suspect in court. Ex-MP killed as she ate. Because it was the first hearing at the Westminster Magistrates Court where they just ask him for a guilty plea. Or sorry, not even that. I mean, ask him for his name and address. Confirm that he's the person. Some prosecutors outline some of the details of the case and then that's it. It's adjourned until the full trial, which won't be for a while yet. Okay, The Mirror. It's the first cabinet meeting. Accused in court and hit 21 times with hammer. Right, got it. It's going to be all the front pages, basically, nearly all of them. With to do Burnham and politics and things. He said, apparently, because cabinet is behind closed doors, effectively, you're allowed to come out in the normal course of events. If you're a member of the cabinet, you're allowed to come out and then start talking about it. Or even minutes are taken. But there's no cameras in cabinet. A live feed of cabinet. That's not a thing. So, apparently, he implored, and that's the word that keeps getting reported, he implored his cabinet to find spending cuts. Now, just that data point. Oh, lovely cup of tea. Put sugar in it this morning. 99 times out of 100, I don't do that. Just fancied it this morning. Apparently, he implored his cabinet to find spending cuts in order that he can spend in other places on the other things he wants to do, like capping bus fares. It was going to be the most radical change in 40 years. No, no, just a joke. That's bad. That's stupid, in my opinion. You're the leader, dude. You were supposed to come into power with a plan. You're supposed to tell them what they're doing now, not ask them what to do, how to do it. That's crazy, isn't it, to me? He's going to sit there in the first cabinet meeting and say, guys, any ideas, any question, let's start spitballing, let's start brainstorming how you can cut your department so I can spend money how I want to spend money. No, what is that? It should be the case that he's got this master plan. He should be saying, right, now, you do this, you do that. You move, shuffle around here, you do this. You do X, Y, Z, and then you can do X, Y, Z, and then we can do... And I've got this overarching grand plan, this idea. Where's that? He hasn't got that. Just like in a war, you've got like, you know, all your senior staff officers. And you're the CO, you're the overall field marshal or something. And you sit down, everyone's waiting for your plan of campaign. And you go, right, guys, what you got? Any ideas? What? We're in trouble then. We're in real trouble. Haven't you got the plan? Haven't you got the ideas? You're supposed to have the overarching grand plan, the strategy. The CO goes, any ideas on strategy, fellas? And you're already in the field. Your army is already in the field. Bit worrying. Bit concerning. I don't think he's got a 10-year plan. Well, not a good one, anyway. Thought he was supposed to come out with his 10-year plan yesterday. He didn't, did he? Did I say that? Might be waiting all summer, or he just might never, ever do it. It might come out today. Who knows? We don't know, do we? He's not really telling us anything of any substance, is he? Things like, we're going to increase the tax allowance. Oh, no, we're not. We're going to cap bus fares. How are you going to pay for that? Don't know. We're going to end rough sleeping. How are you going to do that? Don't know. Hey. The Daily Express. It's a good paper. You can read your Express now. I'm being ironic, of course. It's not a good paper. It's pure globalist slop like all the others and try and destroy anyone to the right of Olukemi Badenoch. All right. Andy under attack for unfunded VAT cut. Yeah, everyone's saying, oh, okay, you've said a number of things about what you want to do, even if they are just broad strokes of the brush. You've said a number of things. How are you going to pay for any of that? Good one. Court hears she, Anne Widdicombe, was killed in 2-minute kitchen attack caught on camera. Yeah, apparently she had some sort of camera in her kitchen. Maybe it was even that, I think, did she even sometimes do podcasts or appearances, like internet appearances from her home? Well, she definitely did that. I don't know if they were ever from her kitchen. I don't know. Apparently she had some sort of camera there that was, and it caught it. Anne was hit 21 times on the head with a hammer, right? Okay. Again, same story. I managed to capture a bit of him in the back of the police car or the police van as he was driven to or from court at some point. That's her actual kitchen that she's in. Oh, very macabre, isn't it? Okay. They're all going with the 21 blows to the head with a hammer bit story. Fashion high flyer who lost her job at 50 and ends up on benefits. Don't care. Day 2 sees a raft of uncosted promises and the first mutiny from a sacked Starmerite echoing the nation by asking, who's going to pay the bill for Andy's largesse? Largesse. Generosity. Handing out money. Who's going to pay for that? Don't know. And Widdicombe. Smashed in the head again. The IR paper. Cost of living. Is that meant to echo sort of education? Anyone doesn't know that. It was one of Tony Blair's sort of main sort of slogans. Soviet era Maoist type slogans. Tony Blair. Education. I think that's what that will be echoing. Burnham is cost of living. He's only ever going to tinker around the edges, isn't he? It's not the most radical change in 40 years. It's not close to that. It's moving the deck chairs a fraction of an inch. New Prime Minister orders his cabinet to find ways to cut UK prices and offer hope. What, hope that all the prices only go up by 2.6% consistently instead of 6 or 7%. Well, great hope, yeah. The great white hope for the British economy. Andy Bumham, who's got no sternum burnham, with his student politics, going to moan about Maggie. If his government collapses, his leadership collapses, the economy collapses under his watch, he'll just blame Thatcher, won't he? Blame Thatcher, probably. Not Harold Wilson. No. Not Clement Attlee. No. Thatcher.
Right.
Okay. Typical electricity bill will fall by £45 a year from October. What is that if that's not moving the deck chairs quarter of a mil on the sinking Titanic? Thanks. Thanks, Andy. £45 a year. A year? If you said a month, that would still be like, that'd be nice, I'll take it. But it's like, it's not really going to change your life, is it? £45 a year. Okay. As Andy Burnham removes VAT from them on his second day. Is that all that will amount to? Doesn't really make sense to me. Removing VAT from... why should there be VAT on electricity bills in the first place? Be a good question. You're going to remove that and it saves you £45 a year. Okay, okay. That is sod all, really, isn't it, in the scheme of things? Burnham will need to raise taxes, claim senior economists, or risk failing to deliver on a raft of his bolder policy pledges. Yeah, we're in a very, very finite space here when it comes to money and spending, the incomings and outgoings of the Treasury. Very, very finite space. If he wants to spend on anything, really, it'll have to come at the expense of something else. Serious reform of our taxes required if new PM wants to target wealth. Institute for Fiscal Studies chief tells the iPaper. Yeah. Yep. Defence spending set for boost. Well, because John Healey is now the Chancellor of the Exchequer, who was until a few weeks ago the Defence Secretary, who quit Starmer's government because the Treasury wouldn't give the Defence Department a few billion more. Well, now he's in control of the purse strings. So you would think, you would hope that at the very least, the Treasury, Mr. Healey's Treasury, will now find that money from somewhere. Surely you would. The optics of him not doing that or failing to do that. You can imagine Right Honourable Mr. Wesley Streeting, practicing homosexualist, who's now the head of the Defence Department, will be saying in Cabinet and behind closed doors in various ways, will be saying to Healey, you're going to give me all the money I want, basically, or most of it. Because that's what you quit government over, so surely you can't refuse now. Okay, defence spending for boost, set for boost. With Chancellor John Healey likely to U-turn on Key Reeves' veto and join Canada Project. Yeah, so Reeves, we know, didn't we? Said, no, the Department of Defence can't have more billions. The yearly budget is already something up and around, I can't remember the exact number, but it's up and around 80 or 90 billion a year, something like that. And they wanted it increased by another 15 billion. Remember all this? And Starmer and Reeves said, no, best we can do is 13.5 billion. And that's what made John Healey resign. And the Starmer government collapse, actually. And then during that window, after that, and between that and now, or that and about a week ago or so, they said, oh, actually, the Treasury said, actually, we haven't even got that 13.5 billion. We said we have, we promised it to you, but it would have to be found from somewhere. Right now, we don't actually have it. Any of it. Okay. Britain isn't rolling in money. We give a lot of it away and waste it on things. Like somehow spending untold billions on a little bit of train track that runs from London to Birmingham. Things like that. On welfare. Our invaders. What a crazy thing. Machiavelli will be turning in his grave. I think historians will look back on it and say, wait, Great Britain, not just Great Britain, other countries as well. Germany, France. they sort of bankrupted themselves. They ruined their economies in order to afford to pay for housing and benefits of the people invading them. What an insane thing that was. What's the psychology behind that, they will ask? Well, it's just people like Burnham, isn't it? It's just people like Starmer and Burnham. They just think it's the right thing to do. Apparently. Well, that's what they claim. It wouldn't be in line with British values if we did anything other than that. What? What? Sacked Starmer loyalist raises doubts over how VAT cut will be funded by a scrapping digital ID project in row with Number 10. Yeah, already, bit of the story is. Enemies of Burnham and his team and his project, his agenda for government, are already sort of piping up. Enemies within the Labour Party. So there's the far left of the party. And then there's the ex-Starmerites who have just all been purged. Both of those gunning for Burnham already. Coming out and briefing, you know, talking to journalists about how Burnham is doing things wrong. I don't have a clue, that sort of thing. The disunity in the Labour Party is a sight to behold, though. Anyone who's not a Labour Party loyalist, everyone, just watch on with like a wry smile. Just like anyone who wasn't a Tory, watch the Tory party rip itself to pieces. With the Liz Truss thing, with the destroying Boris, the Liz Truss debacle, and then the Rishi Sunak abomination. And then them get absolutely shellacked at the ballot box. Anyone that's not a Tory boy, an acting full-blown Conservative Party shill, just watching that with glee, right? Same goes for this with the Labour Party. Yeah, yeah, get him. Yeah, ex-Starmerites and left of the Labour Party. Yeah, get Burnham, get him. Make sure he hasn't really got any power to do anything. Make him look stupid. Make yourselves look stupid. Yeah. It's not funny, really, is it? It's the country. It's out my country. Humiliating itself, eating its own tail. Meanwhile, the economy falls off a cliff. The high street is dystopian, truly dystopian, and we're invaded increasingly more by foreign beast men who go around raping, murdering. It's not funny at all. Yeah, the unity of the Labour Party is non-existent, really. Surprising, isn't it? I guess maybe it's not surprising, but it used to be. It never used to be like that. If a party, any party, got a big majority, I think back to the Thatcher years or to the early Blair years, or most all the Blair years, really. Party's got a big majority, and all they've got to do, they can argue amongst themselves and be factional and infighting as much as they want behind closed doors. As much as you like behind closed doors. Hate each other and nip at each other's ankles. All you want, just do it behind closed doors. And when the government, your leadership, have a vote in parliament, you all vote for it. Nearly all vote for it. Even if you don't like it. And you can moan and complain and catfight behind closed doors. But when it comes to it, when it comes to the formal thing, the main thing, the big show of voting as one in Parliament, trying to get a new bill through, a new Act of Parliament through, you fall in line and you do as the government asks you to do. Because it's your party. That's how it always used to be. Not always, of course. But it's largely how it would be. You've got this incredible privilege that you're part of that gang, you're part of that cabal that gets to make acts of parliament. An incredible privilege to be a part of that. Well, nowadays, the way the Tories behaved in the last few parliaments and the way the Labour Party are behaving now, none of that seems to exist anymore. I mean, what is the point in having a whip system? Doesn't seem to work very well, does it? What's much of the point? You, like, threaten them and cajole them. This is a three-line whip now. Oh, is it? And they're all like, is it? So, don't care. It's like no unity at all. Well, good. Good. I don't want this Labour government to be able to do anything further. I don't trust them to do anything that's in our interests now. I'd like Andy Burnham to be hamstrung as a politician. Let's get that clear. The other day I said something about try and do everything in your power to stop Ed Miliband from regaining his seat. Of course I meant politically. A couple of people in the comments are like, oh, you can't say that. Of course I meant politically. Of course I meant that. I have to say every single time I make any sort of statement like that. Destroy them, beat them, da 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 da. Politically. Yeah, it would be good if Andy Burnham can't really do anything because I don't trust him to do anything that's in our interest. Okay. Oxbridge Cabinet. 17 out of 28 went to Oxford or Cambridge. Don't really care about that. Depends who they are, doesn't it? Depends who they are, depends what they studied, depends what job they've got. In and of itself, I don't care about that. Why not? Might have, may well have had a very, very good education. Some of the older people, some of the old Blairites, some of the older people in their 50s or 60s may have had like a non-woke first-class education from Oxford or Cambridge. Nothing wrong with that. Some might not have done it. It depends, doesn't it? They would be moaning the other way, wouldn't they? Some people would be moaning. None of them went to university or none of them went to Oxford and Cambridge. Yeah. Okay, the Times, the venerable Times. Notting Murders Health Trust faces manslaughter inquiry. This is the story about that guy. What was his name? Callocaine. Valdo Callocaine. The foreign black man who came here, had some terrible mental health issues, wasn't sectioned, wasn't banged up, was allowed out onto the streets and murdered three people in Nottingham. Completely innocent people, remember that? Two young people and an older dude. And apparently now, even, like the actual mental health institution, or the trust that really should have done better, with regards to Mr. Valocaine, they themselves are facing a manslaughter inquiry. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, look into it. Why was this monster allowed out? Why was he in this country in the first place? He was in the wrong country, wasn't he? He shouldn't have been here, should he? Why was he here? Look, they're all having a good time. They're laughing it up. Yeah, laugh it up, clown. Yeah, look, it's all brilliant. Yeah. You're not residing over a sinking ship. Yeah. You've got no mandate from the people. How funny. Burnham signals cuts. Should be a comma there. Signal cuts to pay for spending pledges. Burnham signals cuts to pay for spending pledges. So, not a decrease in spending overall. He wants to just spend in other places. So stop spending here so we can spend there. Aren't we already in massive amounts of debt? Unsustainable amounts of debt. Don't you want to cut spending in general? Gross. No? No? No, not that though. Cabinet told to find savings to fund promises on energy bills, council houses, utilities and bus fares. Yeah, apparently in that cabinet he just said, guys, you've got to go out and find some spending cuts in your departments because I need the cashola for other stuff. Any ideas how you're going to do that? Anybody? No. Because I, Burnham, don't have any clear-cut, solid ideas, apparently. Otherwise, why would he even ask? It's all funny, though. Yeah. Brilliant. Well done, Andy. You get to be on that list of people that have been the Prime Minister. It's all you ever wanted, wasn't it? Don't worry about that you're going to be presiding over a shadow of a nation that once was. Don't worry about that. You get to be in that list along with greats like Wellington and Robert Peel and Lloyd George and Churchill or whatever. You want to be Tony Blair, doesn't he? He wants to be Tony Blair. He wished he could have been in Tony Blair's position in 1997. It's not 1997 anymore, Andy. You're not Tony Blair, Andy. Why has he picked so many Tony Blair people? His cabinet is full of old Blairites, isn't it? What, half of them, is it? He wishes he was Blair. Well, too late for that. The Financial Times, Burnham backs away from rise in tax allowance, not rise in tax, tax allowance, to show fiscal discipline. That's what he's going to do, isn't it? When he's going to raise taxes here and there and everywhere and say, this is fiscal discipline. This is being prudent. This is the right thing to do. And they hold their hand like, it's the right thing to do. Not cut spending, though. Not deport millions of people that are a net drain on the country, no. Not cut foreign aid, no. That's not the right thing to do. Just tax everyone else more. That's fiscal discipline, that's what that's called. All right. The Guardian, oh dear. Oh dear, oh dear. Look at you. The state of you. Have a wash. Disgusting. You stink. You smell. The Guardian. Dear The Guardian, you stink. Of BO. And curry. And poo. That's what The Guardian smells of. Burnham implores cabinet to find ways to tackle cost of living crisis. Ha ha ha. Andy Burnham, look everyone, he's got more charisma than Starmer, didn't you know? Got to vote for us in 2029 now. Look, average voter of the UK that doesn't really know what's going on most of the time, doesn't really pay any attention to politics. Look, he's more personable than Starmer. He's slightly less of a robot than Starmer. You can vote for us now. You can have hope now. This face inspires hope in you, doesn't it? Look, he's a good guy, he's a nice guy, he's a man of the people. He's just a normal fella from the north. He's not an insane Fabian commie pinko leftist student activist idiot. He's one of us. One of us. He's going to inspire hope in politics. He's going to make the country great again. Sure he is. All right. That picture again, that doesn't look like him, does it? That looks like a dude that would work in a kebab shop. That looks like a dude that would bring you your Uber Eats. I've never once used Uber Eats in my life, nor will I. But I know the type. You're too lazy to go and get your own McDonald's. So you use Just Eat or Uber Eats. Some dude turns up on an electric bike that he's stolen to give you, to hand you your McDonald's because you're too lazy to go out and pick up your own Big Mac. And he looks like that. It's an interesting story. Trump furious at foreign secretary role for Miliband. Trump doesn't like Ed Miliband. He knows who Ed Miliband is. Ed Miliband was leader of the Labour Party, wasn't he? Remember that? And during that period of time, before and after as well, I believe, Ed Miliband's on record saying all the sorts of things that the lefties say about Trump, sort of things David Lammy had said about Trump. He's just a terrible, evil, stupid man, all those things. He like wants to be king, he's a fascist or whatever. Trump knows who Ed Miliband is. White House, quote, deeply concerned, quote, at Burnham's cabinet choice of Red Ed Miliband at the Foreign Office, warning serious diplomatic repair is needed as US president hasn't forgotten former Labour leaders past fierce criticism. It's quite easy to please Trump, isn't it? In a sense. You've just got to kiss up to him a bit. You've just got to not talk about him and treat him like a dick. It's sort of all he really asks. Right? But people on the left, many people on the left, can't do that. They're not capable of doing that. They're not capable. So that'd be interesting. I'd be interested to see if the White House, Trump himself, or Marco Rubio, who is the State Department, right? He is Miliband's equivalent. They will meet at some point. Wonder how much or at all if they will really sort of snub him, make him look silly in some ways. Wonder if they will. Whether Rubio will do that or whether Miliband will actually be in the Oval Office, and Trump will do something, you know, a little bit embarrassing. The way they sat Starmer down, remember that? And J.D. Vance gave him a bit of a talking down to. I wonder if they'll do that with Miliband. Will Ed Miliband be tough enough to handle that? Want to talk about, does anyone remember that? Harry, do you know what I'm talking about there? You might not.
No.
Okay. A few years ago, well, it was when Ed Miliband was leader of the Labour Party, or running to be leader of the Labour Party. It's a sort of fairly semi-famous interview. Sat down with Jeremy Paxman, and Jeremy Paxman said, people just don't think you're tough enough, Ed. That's the problem. You seem weak. You're not tough enough. And Ed Miliband said, oh, I am tough enough. What did he say, tough enough? He fluffed the word tough when trying to argue that he was tough. Tough enough. Okay. How to prepare a teenager to take the throne. It's very difficult. Very difficult. I mean, he almost certainly won't get to the throne. That's Wills's boy, isn't it, George? He'll be King George at some point, probably. But probably not till he's in middle age or late middle age. His father's only, what, 25 years old, 30 years at most older than him, so he won't be king for a long time, but probably. Yeah, we've had a number of boy kings ruling in their minority throughout the centuries, haven't we? A number of them. If you anyone watches Bodé's Epochs, they'll know I've gone through the monarchy. I'm all the way up to Edward VI, himself a boy king, actually. We've had a great number of them. How do you prepare a child? How do you tell a child one day you shall be king? How does that not, like, ruin their mind in some ways, their psychology? How do you keep them grounded? Don't know. Doesn't really matter much these days anyway, do our monarchs have very little real power these days. Okay, the Telegraph, the Daily Telegraph, Angela the Fridge Rainer, Big Bird, is walking to number 10. There's no other story than that. It's not like a big story, like she's done or said something important, or... No, it's just... You know, she's 7'2" and weighs 500 pounds. I'm really laughing at that one. Yeah. Okay. PC Harper's killers set for early release. Anyone remember this story? This guy here, that little picture of the little guy there. He was a policeman, PC Harper. He was investigating the report that a quad bike had been stolen somewhere in a semi-rural area, I think. I'm not sure. I don't think it was in a suburban or a metropolitan area. I think it was... Anyway, he was going to investigate that. Then when he got there, there was three people there, younger people. I think they were only very young. And they just tried to flee the scene. Somehow his ankle got caught up in their tow rope. And as they got in a car and fled away, he was dragged down the road for like a mile, at like 40 or 50 mile an hour. And it killed him, of course. And like, terrible. One of the details I read this morning was that, like, it ripped nearly all his clothes off, and he was so mutilated that when people found it, they thought it was like a deer carcass or something. Oh. The driver of the car isn't set for release, but the other two people that are in the car, and you are still responsible in part for stuff like that, right? They were given like something like 13 years in jail in 2020. So they're only 6 years into a 13-year sentence, and they're going to be released. So you're responsible in part for doing that to a police officer, and you serve 6 years. Doesn't seem enough, does it? Burnham backtracks on income tax giveaway. Already the U-turns begin. Already the U-turns begin. If Starmer was known for perhaps his greatest legacy is the number of U-turns he performed. Was it 20 odd or more in the end, in the space of what, 2 years, 18 months? Remarkable. For a normal government that lasts many years, many, many years, you would think, you would hope, you'd be forced into one or two, maybe three U-turns. It would be quite rare. You should go years on end without having to do any U-turns. Most of what you do in government, in a way, in a sense, is to prevent you from having to do U-turns because they're so embarrassing. Right. Everything that goes on behind closed doors, all the backroom dealings, in a sense, is so that you don't have to do U-turns. It's so that the party line always looks as though it was immaculate and correct from inception. Sort of the job of government, isn't it? The job of government in various ways, other than ruling, is to not look incompetent. That's one of the main jobs of a government, is to not look stupid and incompetent. To give the impression that you know what you're doing. It's always the way. In a fight, in a war, give the impression that you're confident and can win that war or that fight. That's a big part of it, isn't it? Big, big part of it. To give the impression, to make it seem as though you're not just bumbling around incompetently and have to keep backtracking and U-turning on what you've just done and said. I think probably history will conclude that that's Starmer's legacy. The U-turn Parliament, they might call it, or something. Keir, the U-turn Supremo Starmer, or something, I don't know. Burnham already backtracking on stuff he said. He's basically the same guy as Starmer, with a tiny bit more charisma and a lot more guyliner. Basically the same guy. Thames Water brings in hosepipe ban as it fights a nationalisation. I've talked about it a bit before, haven't I, about privatisation and nationalisation and the left and right divide over all of that. I told you, didn't I, that even though nationalising things is really a leftist thing, a socialist, even communist thing, sometimes, it is in the nation's best interest. It would have to be if those privatised companies fall into the hands of malevolent forces, companies, owners, that mean to just run it into the ground. Like you allow your train system to be bought by France and Italian companies that just completely mismanage it. Or you allow your steel industry to be bought by Indian and Chinese companies that just deliberately, completely run it into the ground. Well, Thames Water is one of those where I guess I would rather it be nationalised because they can't do much more of a worse job than the private sector has done with Thames Water. Is there anything more vital than your water supply? Truly of national importance, right? Truly an existential crisis if people can't get water anymore. Okay, if it needs to be nationalized, fine then. Rolls-Royce may ditch Britain for Germany. Well, they're already owned by BMW, so... You didn't know that? No? Rolls-Royce? Yeah, yeah. Oh, the BMW group bought them years ago. Oh, yeah. They might just move it to Germany. Yeah, that's what you get if you tax businesses an insane amount. If you tax people an insane amount. Those that have got the ability to just leave do. You listening, Gary Stevenson? Is that his name, Stevenson or Stevens? I can't even remember. I can't even remember the dude's name. That's what happens, yeah. Companies and or people that feel themselves just being robbed, state-sponsored theft, dressed up as taxes, they'll just be like, well, I don't need to stay here for this. I don't have to. I've still got enough capital to go somewhere else, so I will. Pretty straightforward. Yeah, Rolls-Royce moving to Germany. Yeah, well, already owned by BMW, so... Yeah. John Bolton, what are you talking about, John Bolton? You need to worry about your court case, John Bolton. John Bolton says, here's how Trump can reset the war in Iran. Just be quiet now, John. Dude, you've had your time on the stage of history. It's time for you now to just worry about your own legal problems. Aren't you looking, John? Dude, aren't you staring down the barrel of going to prison for the rest of your natural life? For writing a book which gave away state secrets? You are, aren't you? Oh, but you're still going to try and pretend that you strut around on the world stage and you're the master of geopolitics and foreign affairs and you know how everything works, how the world goes round, and all your ideas are the best ideas on everything. Just shut your mouth and go into obscurity now, John Bolton. Scumbag. John Bolton, give me a break. Get him off my screen. Disgusting. Filth. Let's have a look at the price of oil. We do that on this show, don't we, from time to time. Right now, West Texas is trading at a shade over $85 a barrel. Brent crude knocking up close to $92 a barrel. Going up, isn't it? Last night was the 11th straight night of CENTCOM, Hegseth and Mr. Trump bombing Iran, deep into Iran, all over Iran. The 11th straight night. Iran saying, we're just at full-scale war now. That memorandum of understanding, that's way in the rearview mirror. They're back at full, almost basically full-blown war. Very close to the height of it in, what, March. Iran shot some missiles the other day into Jordan, and killed one or two or three. It's complicated. It's over different days. But killed someone, a US service person in Jordan, and a couple other, two or three other people were killed in other places, in American bases in the region. And America striking dozens and dozens and dozens of targets inside Iran, even deep into Iran, night after night after night for the last 11 nights. And there doesn't seem to be any... They're not saying they're going to stop doing it tonight or anything. It's just on again. It's just all on again. That's odd, because within a few days of the war starting in February, I distinctly remember Hegseth and Rubio and Trump coming out and saying nearly everything Iran has got is gone now. Doesn't seem to be the case, does it? Just doesn't seem to be the case. Someone like Dr. Steve Turley, pardon me, someone like Dr. Steve Turley, will tell you it's all part of the master plan. Trust the plan, bro. It's very nearly done. Is it? Didn't Trump come out and say this will be a 3-4 week affair right at the beginning of it? We're now in month five, not week five. Month five. Iranian regime doesn't seem to be collapsing in any way, shape or form. They've got some sort of thing, it's called like a mosaic defence, where individual IRGC or Iranian military, various bits of it, broken up into independent sections, 30 odd, like a mosaic. And each one of those can and does act effectively independently. They don't need, the idea is, they don't need orders from Tehran or anyone else. A many-headed Hydra, in other words. How can the United States destroy that regime without boots on the ground? I'm not sure if they can. And yet, all the analysts are saying there's no appetite. There's no appetite in the Oval Office and at the Pentagon for boots on the ground. US boots on the ground, anyway. The Kurds don't seem like they're capable of it at the moment. So, just this. Just bombing each other. I can only imagine that eventually Iran will have nearly all their military assets destroyed. Eventually. How long will that take, though? Trump's only got another couple of years, hasn't he? Midterms are soon, aren't they? They've only got 2 years after. Can Iran hold out for that whole time until there's a new prez? And that new prez may or may not want to continue this policy. Who knows? It does seem to be Iran's sort of grand strategy to just hold on, hold out. Take as much bombing as the US and Israel are prepared to do. And just hold out, just cling on. Yeah, just rule over a country of ashes. Because now the US are hitting like bridges and infrastructure things, not just military targets. All sorts of other things are being hit now. But the Iranian regime just, you know, they're saying, you know, we retain the right to control the Straits of Hormuz and we'll never give up our nuclear ambitions. That's truly the red line in the sand, isn't it? Even more than sort of the proxy question of Hezbollah and all that sort of thing. Controlling the Straits of Hormuz and their nuclear arsenal and ability to enrich uranium to a weapons-grade purity. That's the thing that the US and Israel are completely and utterly insisting on. And they're the same two things that Iran is completely and utterly insisting on not budging on. Well, all right. Bit of a stalemate then, isn't it? Okay, here's a slightly interesting story, I think. Judge rules Trump must hand over records sought by BBC in defamation case. Just quickly to say, I think it's a mildly interesting story today. Trump's suing the BBC, asking for $10 billion, which would completely ruin the BBC. There's no way. The BBC hasn't got $10 million, let alone $10 billion, to just give away. Because of that Panorama show they did where they cut up his January 6th speeches. They just edited it in a dishonest way to make him look like, sound like he was just calling for violence on Capitol Hill that day, which he wasn't. Quite the opposite, in fact. And he's suing them for it. And it's just, the trial has finally started in Florida. It's in Florida. And yeah, both sides in discovery were supposed to give the court all documents. The BBC handed over like 87,000 pages of documents and the Trump side only handed over 735 pages, which were largely news articles and material pulled from the internet. And the BBC said, that's not fair. That's not fair. Trump needs to hand over loads more documents than that. And the judge said, yeah, you probably do. That's it. That's the story there. It's an ongoing thing. I'm interested to see, very interested to see, the result of that case. I hate the BBC. They are scum and have been ever since the 1920s. Oh yeah, look, there's a story of these two idiot scumbags who dragged that cop to his death. He's going to be let out after 6 years. All right, what's the time? Oh, it's already nearly nine. What other stories did we have of note? Oh, Andy Burnham. You want to cap bus fares? Hey, Andy, we need you to sit in a bus and look like a normal guy. Don't wear a tie. Don't wear a tie. Sit in a bus, lean out of it with your elbow out like you're normal. And we'll snap a picture. And then that'll be perfect for when we talk about policies to do with bus fares. Yeah. West Streeting caught laughing and joking about early prisoner release. That's who they are. That's who these people are. Why would you do that? Why would you be laughing and joking about it? Unless your view of the world, of Britain, was that you wanted to make it less safe, more dangerous. Unless you wanted to, you were happy to see the fabric of our civil society torn apart like wet tissue paper. If that were the case, then perhaps you would laugh and joke about it. If you're a socialist, in other words, if you're a Fabian and or socialist, then it would be funny, wouldn't it? It would be something to laugh and joke about. He'll lose his seat next time. Ilford North, isn't it? Certainly in Ilford. I know Ilford. Ilford's near my neck of the woods. I was born and raised in Essex, East London. London borough of Havering. Travelled, been to Ilford. Two dozen times in my life. Travelled through Ilford thousands of times. To and from uni and work for nearly 20 years. Travelled through Ilford. I know Ilford. It's entirely colonised by Indians, Pakistanis and Bangladeshis, entirely. You get a train in rush hour, morning rush hour, through Ilford. You pull up, the train pulls up on the platform at Ilford. This is no exaggeration. I swear to God, this is no exaggeration. The platform could be a platform in Delhi. 6 rows deep of Indian people, perhaps Pakistanis and Bangladeshis. That's his constituency. You think, and his majority last time was tiny. Was it a few hundred? I can't remember the exact number. Was it 400, 600 odd? Something in that ballpark. Under 1,000, I believe. So Mr. Wesley Streeting, the practicing homosexualist who is now head of our defence, will lose his seat at the next election. I would bet my mortgage on that. So laugh it up, clown. Have a good time while you're still in power, because you've only got another couple of years at most, and then you're on the scrap heap of history, brother. All right. Should we do on this day in history? You guys seem to like that bit. I quite liked it doing that bit. On this day, down through the centuries, on the 22nd of July, what happened of note? Okay, on this day in 1099, Godfrey de Bouillon is elected first defender of the Holy Sepulchre of the Kingdom of Jerusalem during the First Crusade. Do you remember a week ago or so, we talked about how the Crusaders, the Franks, the Western Knights, were able to get inside Jerusalem against all odds. Remarkable they ever got out of Antioch, let alone got to Jerusalem, let alone got inside Jerusalem. Well, they did though. And their leader, nominal leader, there was sort of more than one leader, but probably their main leader, Godfrey de Bouillon. They made him, because the whole point of the crusade was to save the Church of the Holy Sepulchre and the Rock of Golgotha and all that sort of thing. Save it from the ravages of the Muslim hordes. So there you go, you did that. We held on to Jerusalem for a couple of generations after that. I say we. European people, shall I say. Okay. On this day in 1456, Hungarian army under John Hunyadi, I think I'm pronouncing that right. I've read a bit about him in the past. Defeats the forces of Ottoman Sultan Mehmed II. That is the Mehmed the Conqueror. The one that got inside Constantinople for the first time in 1453. So Mehmed the Conqueror finally takes Constantinople, modern-day Istanbul, finally takes it off the Byzantines, the Christian Byzantine, Eastern Roman Empire, finally falls after centuries and centuries of trying, and then pushes on pushes on into the Balkans and Eastern Europe. But John Hunyadi, maybe pronouncing that incorrectly, defeats them, or ends the siege of Belgrade, halting Ottoman expansion in Europe for 70 years. Yeah, in subsequent generations. They got as far as Vienna, didn't they? But for a while there, John Hunyadi is able to stem the bleeding, so to speak. Okay, on this day in 1515, First Congress of Vienna settles issues between Poland and the Holy Roman Empire, demonstrating the Habsburgs' growing influence. So there's more than one Congress of Vienna in history. Be aware of that. Like, there's multiple treaties of Paris, treaties of London. There's loads of them in history. If you go on Wikipedia, there'll probably be this ambiguation thing. Which one do you mean? Yeah, Congress of Vienna. In this instance, you know, in the early 16th century, it's to do with Poland and the Holy Roman Empire. Okay, we're right at the beginning of the Reformation there, aren't we? We're right at the beginning of the time of Luther, the wars of religion. Okay, on this day in 1942, 300,000 Jews from the Warsaw Ghetto are sent to Treblinka extermination camp. On this day in 1963, Sarawak achieves independence from British colonial rule. Sarawak, basically in Malaya, what was called Malaya, it's Borneo, really. The giant island of Borneo. Big part of that big is Sarawak. 1963. So that would be after what was called the Malayan Crisis. The Malayan Crisis playing out all through the 50s. And into the early 60s, was it? A bit like, no, it wouldn't be that late, anyway, a bit like Vietnam in the sense, in the limited sense, that they feared that communism was just going to take it over entirely. Not far from a completely unfounded concern. And so that must be stopped, just like Vietnam, right? The domino effect. Can't allow South Vietnam to fall to communism, because then the rest of the Far East or the world might fall to the Reds. Same sort of thing in Malaya. Must fight some sort of guerrilla insurgency, counterinsurgency war in the jungles and cities of Malaya to prevent communism from taking over. The Malayan Crisis. Well, at the end of all of that, not many years after, Borneo achieves its independence from British colonial rule. Yeah. Not in our interest, really, to have Borneo as an overseas possession. Far more of a headache than it was ever worth, surely, but okay. On this day in 2011, Norway is the victim of two terror attacks, a bomb blast targeting government buildings in central Oslo and a massacre at a youth camp on the island of Utøya. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Yeah, so that's that Anders Breivik. Do you remember that? Harry, do you remember that? Were you still a little kid? Were you young?
Yeah, I think I would have been.
It would have been
like 12 in 2011.
Do you remember that at all? I guess it's a bit dark and you were maybe a bit too young to remember it. Well, anyway, so for Zoomers, or people may not have heard it, some guy called Anders Breivik, just a lone individual Norwegian man, blew up a building. Was it a car bomb? I can't remember. Blew up a building in the middle of Oslo. And then there was an island, like a retreat holiday island thing just off the coast, where I think it was lefties, wasn't it? I think it was like the Socialist Party. Some Norwegian version of their socialists had like a camp, a holiday camp getaway thing for a youth camp. So like teenager age kids that wanted to be in the socialist, some sort of socialist party movement of Norway. Dozens or hundreds of them on this island, this youth camp. And he went there dressed as a policeman with loads of guns and ammo, and killed loads of them. Loads of them, dozens and dozens, wasn't it? I can't remember the toll. Really, really ruthless and brutal, really. And he was playing the part of, like, after the firing starts and there's just mass panic and confusion, he's going around pretending to be a cop, like, rally on me, I'm a cop, I'm an armed cop here, I'm here to save you from the terrorist incident that's going on. Very, very dark and cynical, isn't it? And when they would sort of rally to him, for safety, that's when he mows him down. So he got a really, really high body kill count. Anders Breivik. Horrible. Okay, all right. So that's the last one of those. Should we do our Rumble Rants and Super Chats? We do that at this time of the show. Let me do this with my mic boom so I can see the left-hand side of my screen. Is Global Church History going to be in at number one? He is. And new. Someone beat him to it yesterday. Although I think he said he put in his comment too early and somehow Rumble didn't register it. So he's too efficient yesterday. Well, we've only got one today. That's rare. We've only got one Rumble rant. All right, but it is Global Church History. He tells us this. Today in 1587 AD, colonists arrive to re-establish the Roanoke colony. On loadcetus.com, my history theme show, O'Day's Epochs, literally hundreds, without exaggeration, hundreds of hours of content, a body of work built up over 5 years. On there, do you think I talk about the Roanoke colony? Yeah. Oh, it's there. Got a whole long form bit of content all about Sir Walter Raleigh, who bankrolled that, wanted to go himself, but Queen Bess prevented him from physically going himself. Anyway, that's older than Jamestown. Some people think Jamestown is the first English colony in the New World. No, it was Roanoke Island off the Carolinas, if I recall correctly. It was a complete failure. When people returned to it a few years later to see how it was doing, it was deserted. Looks like the people were staring down the barrel starving to death and they decided to go inland and throw themselves on the mercy of the Native Americans. Probably. We don't know. It's a little bit of a Mary Celeste mystery, kind of. Global Church History tells us that in 1587, colonists arrived to re-establish the Roanoke colony. Yeah, because the first one turned into a ghost town. No one really knows exactly what happened. Exactly. Interesting, though, isn't it? Okay. And then he also tells us that on this day in 1812, Sir Arthur Wellesley, the Duke of Wellington, defeated the French at Salamanca. Ah, classic. I quote from Sir Charles Oman quite a lot when I am doing my histories on the monarchy. But what Sir Charles Oman, Professor Sir Charles Oman of Oxford University, is best at, known for, his magnum opus, is a very, very long, insanely detailed history of the Peninsular War, which is the Spanish and Portuguese and English against the French in the Napoleonic era in Spain. The Peninsula being the Spanish Peninsula. The Peninsula War. It's a great work by Sir Charles Oman. A bit about Salamanca, the Battle of Salamanca there. Superb. So the English, with Portuguese help, have taken Ciudad Rodrigo, we've taken Badajoz, and we can now push into Spain itself. And we decide we'll push Marmont back from Salamanca. And if we can beat him at Salamanca, the road to Madrid itself is open. And it will cut off salt down in the bottom at Cadiz. So Marmont and Wellesley, shadowing each other for a few days, marching through the Spanish countryside, shadowing each other, neither prepared to give battle unnecessarily. In the end, well, Marmont coming down from Valladolid and Wellington coming up from Salamanca. Finally, one day, the Duke of Wellington looking out over the battlefield, what might potentially be a battlefield. So he's got the eye, hasn't he, Wellington? He can read a battlefield perfectly. Knows exactly what he's doing. True master. Never lost a big battle. Never. Wellington. One of the greatest commanding officers of all time, Wellington. His eye for what's going on and what is dangerous and what isn't. Seeing what mistakes the enemy might make. Absolutely razor sharp. One point he sees Marmont trying to flank him a bit, trying to move his Marmont's left wing around Wellington's right wing. And Wellington sees that he's overstretched himself slightly there, ever so slightly, and that he, Wellington, has got some extra reinforcements behind the line. And even though it's only really, really a very, very slight error, a very, very slight risk being taken there by Marmont, Wellington's sitting on his horse, having some lunch, eating a chicken leg. He sees that. He spies that. throws the chicken leg over his shoulder and says, by God, that will do. Orders. Starts throwing around orders. And thus the Battle of Salamanca takes place and we win. And the road to Madrid is open. Soult has to retreat from the south of Spain. The whole peninsula war is blown wide open. Just because the Duke of Wellington saw that Marmont had ever so slightly extended his right. Love it. Absolutely love it. Okay. Do you think I've got a three-part episode talking about the Peninsula War? Early epochs in conversation with one Mr. Cole Benjamin. Do you think I've got that there? Oh, it's there. It's all there. All there. All right. Oh, and Global Church History has given a third factoid for the morning. He says, it's also St. Mary Magdalene's Day. Oh, right. Mary Magdalene, a fascinating, interesting figure from the Gospels. Well, and apocryphal and Gnostic writings as well. I mean, some say she was a prostitute or a reformed prostitute. There's nothing in the Gospels that say that. There's a particular speech from Pope Gregory I in like the late 6th century that said that she was might have been a reformed prostitute. But there's nothing in the canon, in the actual Gospels, saying that. Some say she might have been Jesus' lover. And that's not in the Gospels. There are apocryphal and Gnostic writings that may suggest that. I haven't read all of those. Very few people have. But she was like the apostle of the apostles. She's sort of painted in the Gospels as sort of one of Jesus' sort of first apostles, disciples, followers. And like her and Peter, really. Perhaps the rocks on which Jesus' ministry is founded. She's there at the crucifixion and stuff. And the resurrection and all that. Fascinating figure. Fascinating, interesting figure. And Global Church History tells us that it's St. Mary Magdalene's Day today, the 22nd of July. All right, let's have a look at our YouTube ones. There's a fair few here, 20 or more. Another Rumble Rant just popped in there from Hugh Mann. Human 17 says, Faras had a great chat with Ghost of based Patrick Henry yesterday on Badlands Media, which is on Rumble. Worth a listen. Thank you for all you do, Bo! No, thank you. Thank you for being in the glorious band, The Chosen Few, my band of brothers and sisters. Okay, Faras had a good chat with this based Patrick Henry. Ghost of based Patrick Henry. Interesting, okay. Faras is a very, very interesting guy. Certainly knows his onions about a whole number of things. There's no doubting that. Okay, good. Good to know. All right. Now, the YouTube ones. What have we got here? Kiefer Brown, 1337, says, on this day in 2011... Oh, you've done the Anders Breivik thing. You've said, 77 are killed as Norway suffers its deadliest terror attacks since the Second World War at the hands of Eamon Holmes. Okay, I get it now. I get it now. For anyone who might not know, one time, a couple of months ago, probably the worst blooper error I've made on the Bo Show. Not too bad, really, for sort of knocking seven, getting on towards 8 months. That would be hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of hours. The worst one I did, I went to talk about Hugh Edwards, and I just said Eamon Holmes. Oof. I know the difference between Hugh Edwards and Eamon Holmes. I know they're two completely different people. I am aware. Sometimes it happens. If you talk for hundreds and hundreds of hours, you're going to make mistakes like that. And my brain is thinking Hugh Edwards. I'm envisioning Hugh Edwards. But my mouth says Eamon Holmes. Poor Eamon Holmes. I did correct myself straight away after the show. Like on Twitter and I think on the YouTube comments as well. Saying apologies. That was a good faith error. Genuine error. I know the difference between Eamon Holmes. Okay. So yesterday someone made a joke. I didn't even get it at the time, but that Eamon Holmes is responsible for things. It's a joke now, is it? It's an in-joke on the Bo Show. That Eamon Holmes is responsible for things, even terrible things, he didn't do. So for comedy purposes, very, very dark comedy purposes, Kiefer Brown has decided to mistake Anders Breivik for Eamon Holmes. That is very, very dark humour. Okay. We do know that it wasn't Eamon Holmes that did that. Conducted that mass casualty event in Norway. Let's move on. Kiefer Brown again says, you can't fix because he lives alongside Project Ukraine. I don't know what you're saying there. We can't fix because he lives alongside Project Ukraine. I don't know what because he lives is. I have no idea what that means. Sorry, no idea. Okay, Brendan Lucas, 9732, says, but Bo, if I have to spend 10 minutes going out for McDonald's breakfast, that's 10 less minutes looking at you, and then a big heart on it. Just Eat Guy says hi. Oh, well, thank you. The Just Eat Guy one is to go. Oh, thanks for that. By the way, do watch Breakfast with Bo. It's on LotusEaters.com. Podcast of the Lotus Eaters. Oh, do like the stream, by the way. Do make sure you're subbed to the channel. Press the thumbs up button and get the bell on. I need to say that every single day without fail. I need to work that into my opening little spiel, the opening monologue bit, don't I? I need to remember to do that, I really do. Yeah, tell the Just Eat guy to watch the Bo Show. He might deport himself. Okay, Brendan Lucas again says, lots of anoraks say Helen can be black because she's a myth. No. Does that mean we can make the Nigerian spider god and their pantheon Sean Bean or something? Right, yeah. Yeah. Now, people saying that it's okay to depict Helen as a sub-Saharan African person, just be completely suspicious of them, that they've got nothing but bad intentions in their heart. They will hate us and our culture and our history and our heritage. Hate it. Hate it. Mythical, okay, Helen is mythical, at the very least semi-mythical, granted. Nonetheless, the semi-mythical character is described in Homer as pale. Blonde-haired, pale, swan-necked, white-armed. You don't mistranslate it. People say, oh, it's the translation. No. Stelios, of Lotus Eaters fame, he's obviously fluent in Greek, it's his first language, and can read ancient Greek. And he says, no, there's no... Ask him. Ask anyone. There's no ambiguity about Homer's words, the original words of the epic poem. Now, she's white-armed. She's pale. She's blonde-haired. So there it is in black and white. Simple. If you want to change that, subvert that, pervert that, okay, but don't pretend you're not deliberately perverting it. Don't tell me it's okay. Don't tell me you haven't done anything wrong. Okay. Oh, do we do a poll? I forgot to read out the poll. Bring up the poll for us, Harry. Because it was about the Odyssey, wasn't it, if I recall? Yeah, there we go. 1,300 votes. Nearly 1,350 votes there. We asked you guys, do you plan to see the Odyssey in the cinema? And it's an overwhelming win for the no vote. 95% of you say no. Again, it's a little bit of teeing you up so you could knock it out of the park, wouldn't it? A little bit. A cool 95% of you say no. You've got no intention of going to the cinema to see it. Fair enough. Good. Who's the other 5%? Get out. Just get out. Who are you? What do you want here? You're in the wrong place. Don't go. Don't go. I still love you. We can make this work. I didn't mean that. I was joking. I was obviously joking. Don't go. Don't leave me. All right. I'm still finding that joke amusing. Okay, probably I won't ever get old at this point. If it hasn't started to get old yet, it probably won't. Okay, what else have we got? Looks like anorex. Kiefer Brown again says, on reflection, the 2011 attack... This is going to be another really dark joke about the Anders Breivik. Let me quickly read it, like in my head, before I... On reflection, the 2011 attack was too recent to jokingly attribute to Eamon. Poor taste. Besides, Holmes' worst crimes were committed centuries ago. Just building on the joke that he was like... what, like the destruction of the Gauls in 40 BC, in the 40s BC. That was actually Eamon Holmes or something or whatever. The almost complete annihilation of the Hittite civilization in like 1200 BC was actually Eamon Holmes. It's quite funny. All right. Let's move on. Daniel D. King says, if we were to get a based King George, how much power could he wrestle back from Parliament? What influence could be placed upon him? Can he fix it? I don't think so. I mean, I don't know, but I doubt he could wrestle back hardly any power from Parliament. Now, what influences could be placed upon him? Can he fix it? I don't think so. Those days are long gone. Even in the Victorian era, like even as far back as sort of the 1840s, 1850s, Queen Victoria tried to wrestle a tiny bit of power back from Parliament and was completely shut down. Completely shut down. Like a good 150, knocking towards 200 years ago before kings could, I mean, I don't know, George V. I don't know, these days, I mean, perhaps if the king actually led a military coup d'etat, maybe then, but that's just not going to happen, is it? Based King George, would he do that? King George, what, would he be the seventh? The kid that's just a little kid at the moment grows into a man. He becomes like a Hannibal type figure, an Alexander figure. Completely politically and militarily fearless. Rolls the dice of chance over and over again and wins. Is that what he's going to become? I doubt it. I doubt it. Looks like a, just like a, it's just, okay, who knows. All right. Calzetti says, McDonald's Brighton, not a white face behind counter. Yeah, oh, I can believe that. Completely believable. Rince wins 6'7", says 7'2", 500 pounds. That's the big show of Angela the Fridge Rayner, Big Bird. 7'2", 500 pounds, and then laughing, crying, smiley faces. That's worth £5 every day of the week. Ordered Islander 6, took less than 5 days to get. Great job. Cool, yeah. If anyone remembers the early days of Islander, at least, I don't know all the details because it's not really my realm or domain in Lotus Eaters at all. I know we had all sorts of headaches and problems with at least the first two issues of sending them out. It's not straightforward. Do you want to mail thousands of things all over the world, potentially at least all over the world? You think that's straightforward? It's actually not. It's actually sort of a bit of a logistical nightmare, it seems. You actually need a whole project manager type thing set up to manage that. Anyway, seems like now, I believe, issue after issue, getting more and more better efficient. Like most things, you need a bit of practice. So nowadays, I believe, I think, I hope, that Islander deliveries are a lot better than they were to begin with. So good. Less than 5 days to get it. Brilliant. Good stuff. Great to hear. Okay. Kiefer Brown, 1337, says, boots in Iran, Lindsey Graham smiles up from below. Yeah, Lindsey Graham always wanted that, didn't he? Always. Very, very hawkish was Senator Graham. Wherever there was a sniff of war, he was on board with it, wasn't he? Emily for Restore says, US should send IRGC back to the C6. If they want to, if Trump's policy is to make sure at all costs that Iran can never ever have a nuclear weapon, that regime will need to be toppled, won't it? Does seem like it's not going to be possible without boots on the ground, but who knows? Mr. Dickie Bingo, how are you, sir? Good to hear from you. Says, disdain cam needed for BBC mentions, Bo. Oh, yeah. That'll be tons, wouldn't it? That'll be tons. Yeah, maybe I should, every time I mention at least like the Trump defamation case of the BBC, and quickly turn to disdain cam for that. Yeah. Yeah, good call. Maybe I will. People like the disdain cam thing, don't they? All right. Emily for Restore again says, also, Trump for the win versus the BBC. Yeah, I hope he wins, yeah. I hope he wins and bankrupts them and they have to close as an organisation. Yeah. They are a detriment to our society at this point. Brendan Lucas again says, interestingly, I had a chat with my friend that Helen is a historical heuristic. And while we agree the Romans would be like, why is she black? Alexander would be like, I like it. Makes sense to me. Okay. I mean, okay, fair point. Yeah. That you would only race swap Helen of Troy if you wanted to humiliate the Western tradition. If you wanted to rub dirt in its face. It's the only reason you'd do it. Don't tell me about its diversity and inclusion and all that sort of thing. No. Helen of Troy. You know, make it some sub-Saharan woman and tell us that it's believable she's the most beautiful woman on earth. No. No, the only reason you would do that, the only reason, is to be deliberately subversive and to pour scorn on Western history and heritage, literary history and heritage. There's no other reason. It's a revolting thing to have done. What are you playing at, Christopher Nolan? Okay, last two here. I'm Mad Andy Lion. It's one long thing, difficult to read, is it? I'm Mad Andy Lion. I'm not sure. All right. Says, long time listener, first time caller.
Oh.
Welcome aboard. In holidaying beyond the Iron Curtain, so have time to watch live. All right, so you're further east, so it's a bit later in the day for you. Oh, cool, good. Here's some folding money to celebrate. Oh, thank you very much. Thank you very much. Really, really appreciate it. Cheers. It would be... Oh, it'd be I'm a dandelion. I'm a dandelion, surely it's to be read. Okay, good. Thank you. Welcome aboard. The glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Okay, and the last one here, Brendan Lucas again, says, why was Dunkirk historically accurate to the point of using the right model of Spitfire, but not a single boar head for the Ithacans? Seems lazy. Yeah, you can make films that are historically very accurate if you want to. Yeah. He didn't want to, did he? It's a deliberate decision, isn't it? Very, very deliberate decision with the Odyssey there to make it all weird and perverse. Subversive. Yeah, boycott it. Yeah, don't watch it. Oh, we have one more just popped in. Why not read it out? From Brendan Lucas again, says, what was the longest lived Greek successor state? Oh, I don't know. Greek successor state, the longest lived one. Probably the Ptolemies in Egypt. Would it not be? Would it not be? That lasted longer than the Seleucid Empire, didn't it? So the Ptolemies in Egypt, right? All the way up to Cleopatra. And, you know, Mark Antony and Augustus days. She's still a Ptolemy, isn't she? She's Cleopatra the sixth Ptolemy. So I guess that one. If that's what you're asking, I think. All right, there you go. That's the show. It's now 28 minutes past 9 in the AM British Summer Time on Wednesday, the 22nd of July in the year of our Lord 2026. Thank you for joining me. Without you, it isn't a thing. My band of brothers, thank you. Appreciate it. You're the best among us. Tuning in live to the Bro Show. Thank you. From the bottom of my heart, genuinely. Thank you. All right, try and make the best of the day ahead. Carpe diem, seize the day. If you can, it's the most valuable thing you will ever have, your time. Try and make it count. You're at liberty to do something that you want to do with your time today. Try and make it count. Try and do something valuable with it. It's finite. Your time on this earth is finite. Probably later than you think. All right, I'm not going to get too preachy about it. Until tomorrow morning then. Take care.
Forget whatever plans you have this weekend because you're staying at home and playing on SpinQuest. And there's never been a better time to sign up than right now. New users get $30 coin packs for just $10. All the table games you love with hundreds of slot games and real cash prizes. That's at SpinQuest.com. spinquest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit spinquest.com for more details.